Can't pay the IRS? Haven't filed in a while? Receiving threatening letters? Yeah, it's about to get worse. The IRS is hiring an army of agents targeting hardworking Americans like you. You need warriors on your side. You need Tax Network USA. Tax Network USA has brilliant strategies to solve your IRS problems quickly and in your favor. For instance, they've discovered a limited-time special offer that the IRS is willing to waive $1 billion in penalties. Find out if you qualify before it's too late. Never call the IRS alone. Let Tax Network USA attorneys handle it. They have preferred direct lines to the IRS. They know which agents to work with and which to avoid. They've resolved over $1 billion in tax debts and offer a best-in-class guarantee. Schedule your free consultation now. Call 1-800-245-6000. That's 1-800-245-6000 or visit TNUSA.com/Victor. TNUSA.com/Victor.
Hello and welcome to the Victor Davis Hanson Show. We are on the Friday News Roundup, and there's been a lot going on this week, of course, in the Trump trial and in student protests. And so we'll get to those things first. But first, let's listen to these messages.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Bite.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Welcome back to the Victor Davis Hanson Show. For everybody who's new, Victor is the Martin and Ely Anderson Senior Fellow in Military History and Classics at the Hoover Institution and the Wayne and Marsha Buskey Distinguished Fellow in History at Hillsdale College. You can find him on social media, X. His handle is at VD Hanson. And on Facebook, it is Hanson's Morning Cup. So please come join us there and at the website, victorhanson.com. So, Victor, we've got lots of protests going on, pro-Palestinian or pro-Hamas even protests. And these protesters are yelling a lot of very anti-American things and saying things like Hamas, what is their Al-Qassam unit is going to be coming here soon. It's very disturbing.
It's an endorsement of October 7th. They're basically saying the people who raped, killed, mutilated 1,200 people, we want them to come here and kill Jews here in the United States. So you couldn't be more explicit. When they say 47 or 48, they mean no Israel. They're pretty, you know, they use the F word, America, F, of course, Israel.
Didn't they shout death to America,
yes,
too?
So they're saying death to America.
And don't they mean Al-Qassam is going to come here for Americans
yes.
as well?
So if they're, I mean, if they, and they were cheering Iran, so they're treasonous if they're American citizens. If they're not American citizens, are we so impoverished with guests that we have to have these people come here and take advantage of our hospitality and gratitude to let them in, and then no sooner than they arrive, they start attacking the United States? And can't we just say to them, you're right, America's not for you. So rather than say death to America or F America, why don't you just go back to Gaza and Jordan and West Bank and yell out your heart's delight at how bad we are? And we promise we won't go to your countries. But they won't do that. But the thing about it is we've lost all deterrence. So if you had deterrence, it wouldn't continue. Remember Voltaire's famous thing about Admiral Byng? He said every once in a while, the English, I think that's in Candide, every once in a while the British have this strange custom of hanging an admiral.
Yeah.
Encourage l'autre, to encourage the others to behave. Well, if you arrested, say, if you took Ilhan Omar's child and she broke a law, I mean, a rule at Columbia, and she did.
Yes.
So she's suspended. And if you just said, you know what, you're not going to come back, that would set a precedent, and other people then wouldn't do it. And if you had a foreign student who you arrested, rather than letting him out that day, you could charge them with a felony. Somebody poked somebody in the eye with a flagpole. That's a felony. But you just put them in jail, and then you see if they have a green card or a student visa. And if they're arrested, you know, if they violated their students, they violated student protocol, you say, you know what, you don't have to have a student visa anymore. It's an administrative matter. Bye. And it would stop.
Yeah.
But if you can encourage it by doing nothing, or if you're the president of the United States, who just gave a very misleading, dishonest take on Charlottesville, he's cutting commercials now, you remember, that Trump said both sides. There's good people on both sides. What he was talking about, if you look at the whole passages, he said, I'm not talking about the Nazis. I'm talking about the people who had legitimate grievances about statue toppling. And he said, I'm not talking about Antifa. I'm talking about people who had grave and legitimate cares about the racists that were there. Okay. And Joe Biden said, see, he just does both sides. That's exactly what he did. They can't open their mouth about anti-Semitism without saying there's Islamophobia. So that's what Biden said. He said, well, we're going to stop. I condemn the anti-Semitism, and I condemn those who don't know what's going on with the Palestinians. Why don't you tell us what's going on, Mr. Biden? What is going on? I'd like to know. We're told the Palestinians are disparate peoples that have nothing to do with Hamas, but they have a lot more to do with Hamas than the Russian people do with Putin. And they seem to support them overwhelmingly. The so-called pro-Palestinian marches have turned and transmogrified into pro-Hamas marches. So why don't you just say, Corinne Jean-Pierre was asked about anti-Semitism. She spent one nanosecond. And then remember, she pivoted to Islamophobia. Mm. So my question for the Biden administration, would you please tell me at what particular pro-Israeli demonstration, when you saw a lot of Jewish people with Israeli flags, that they said, I want to kill, they said, F America, death to America, or they cheered Iran, or any enemy of the United States, or they said, we want to wipe out the Palestinian people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can't think of any.
No.
So there's a big asymmetry. And it's just a question now, after they've stopped commute traffic, occupied bridges, disrupted the Catholic Easter service at St. Patrick's, Christmas and Times Square, chasing Jews into libraries, hitting Jews. That one scene where they were linking arms to stop Jewish students from entering Columbia, that was right out of that famous scene at the University of Vienna, I think it was 1938, where stormed SA people, brown shirts, held hands. Maybe it was actually Hitler Youth. They held hands so Jewish students couldn't go into the University of Vienna.
Yeah.
So whoever thought we would get to this point in the United States? I did. And it started with Obama and Obama's Iran policy, that it was really an anti-Semitic, anti-Israeli policy. And here we are. And now it's going to accelerate and accelerate. It's like Kristallnacht. And it's just going to keep accelerating until somebody says no mas. And to have no mas, you have to arrest people who break the law, and you have to indict them. And then you have to, as well as that, you have to deport people on student visas who break university rules. Simple as that. Presto, problem solved.
Yeah. What do you think about how the elites of our universities are actually handling it? For example, the president of Columbia.
Well, she's on record before saying all kinds of radical things in the past, but she was went up before Congress and she couldn't really tell you at what point students should be suspended for doing what. I mean, she has a rule that you can't go out and camp on the graduation site. And then she said, well, you could be there, but you couldn't have tents. And they had tents anyway, and she didn't do anything. It's like Joe Biden saying, don't. Nobody listens to her. Nobody listens to the MIT president. Nobody listens to any of them.
No.
They're all creatures of DEI, and they're terrified of their own faculty. It's really time to take a great look at these elite universities. They have done so much damage in 3 years. Does anybody out there really think if your son or daughter graduates with a Stanford BA, Harvard or Yale, it's a sign of academic excellence? Does anybody ask themselves, how do these students have so much time? I mean, I went to UC Santa Cruz when it just opened, and it was very rigorous, but I had no time. In 1971, there was a tail end of demonstrations, and I would go in the Cal College library, and I'd study for 8-9 hours a day to learn Greek and Latin and to read French and German and all these courses, and these kids would be out there, and they were taking pass-fail. But the kids that were studying had no time for that. These people have all this time. Why do they? What are they taking? And the answer, of course, is if you get rid of the SAT and you don't comparatively judge GPAs, you're letting in people that you wouldn't have let in 5 years ago or 3 years ago. And then that's the beginning, as I always say. It's not the end. Then you have to accommodate them. So there's not these courses and this grade. Yale gives 80% A's. Who wants to hire somebody from an institution where 80% are considered excellent by grading? So it's going to happen where a lot of employers and a lot of parents are going to say that degree does not mean anything. It's all DEI, it's all race, it's all ideology, and you can have it. We're done with you. And I think people should really think about that if their children want to go to trade school. Wouldn't it be, I don't see this happening at trade schools. I don't see kids that are learning to be plumbers and carpenters and drywall electricians. I don't see they're doing this.
No.
So this is a phenomenon of the very wealthy and the elite at the most exclusive and expensive colleges whose parents want to brand them and get them on the insider high track. And I don't think they know anything. I don't think that these people who, when I look at Blinken or Jake Sullivan or any of these people, Susan Rice, any of them, I don't see any sign of erudition or great knowledge. These universities are a joke. They really are. And I just don't, I had a good friend who was a big CEO, he had a billion-dollar corporation. He said to me once, Victor, these places are, you can't expect them to educate people. They're all ideological. So when I hire people, I don't expect them to know anything. I said, well, why you hire them? He said, because they have the SAT and they have GPA. So to get in there, you had to have a high SAT, so you have some aptitude, and you had to work hard to get a 4 point. So I just retrain them. But take away that, so that the GPA doesn't mean anything and there is no SAT, then what's the criteria? They don't learn anything.
Yeah.
The majors are a joke. And why? We got to get out. I keep saying that. We just got to stop subsidizing $2 trillion for these kids to go out and insult the country and the taxpayers. So when they go out and they say, death to America, they're saying to the guy who's under, you know, a house trying to put a 3-inch plastic connection into the toilet on his flat on his back, they're saying, screw you and your country. And then they're saying, and you pay my loan that I won't. And that's not sustainable. This is like act one, act two, act three of an ongoing Greek tragedy. And we're at act four now.
Yeah.
And they don't understand how many people despise what they're doing. And all Donald Trump has to do is every day he goes into court, he comments on this stuff, crime, the demonstrations. He doesn't talk about the case. And then he goes out of the courtroom and he can say a word or two about the case. And then he goes on to these issues. And that will be as effective as campaigning.
Yeah, I think so. There was a really good article on in the Wall Street Journal by Stephen Stalinsky, and he wanted to probe who was behind the protests. And he looked, and he, basically his article says, Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Houthis are working through meetings, interviews, and podcasts with surrogates in this country. And he pointed out some of the surrogates, and I thought that was a pretty good article because it is interesting to note who is programming these young students to have these radical views that really don't make sense either in reality, right? They don't make sense. Women protesting for Hamas that hates women. Like, that's like a Monty Python
transgender
movie.
What if you were openly transgendered in Gaza? What would happen to you? How about Iran? You just say, you know what? I'm transgender. I'm going to transition. What we think they would do to you in a madrasa. Mm-hmm. And so all the tents look similar. People have remarked about that. The placards look similar. The chants are all scripted.
Yes.
And it's all these useful idiots. It's these very wealthy, pampered American citizens, mostly white and Asian, some DEI students, black and Latino, all upper middle class. And they feel that this is faddish and you're going to show your, I don't know, your authenticity by mouthing these blood-curdling chills. And yet, if they had to go live in Gaza or they had to go deal with Hamas, and you can't keep talking like this. At some point, you just do it. And that's why this election is going to be so interesting, because, believe me, we have seen only the very, very beginning. This Alvin Bragg travesty, the Letitia James travesty, they are terrified. Hillary Clinton's shriek, barking at the moon again that Trump's going to kill somebody. And you've got all the, you know, you got the old players in the dossier. You've got the Biden conglomerate. And they know what's happening. The Republicans have never had a better chance to take back the Senate. And they can extend that House majority 10 to 15 seats. And they can win the presidency if they do things all right and they watch out for election cheating. And if they do that, in the first 100 days, they can stop the madness. They really can. They can just say, day one, we build the wall. Day two, we deport anybody. We give everybody 30 days and you got to get out if you came illegally during the last 3 years. All 10 million, just go back home. Then we go tell Mr. Obrador, we're sick of the 100,000 deaths. We know what you're doing, and here's the deal, Mr. Obrador. We are taxing 20% the $60 billion you get, okay? That's $12 billion in our income. And if you complain and you don't stop, it's going to go to 30%, 40%, and we're going to cut off all of it. It's another $60 billion to Central America. And we'll just keep taxing until you cooperate. And that seems very simple to do that. And we can just tell all of the federal DOJ and new DOJ cast, if there are simultaneous demonstrations at the Golden Gate and Manhattan Bridge and they're coordinated and they're across state lines, we want racketeering charges against all of these hoodlums. And we're talking about January 6th stuff, like 5 years, 10 years. The left loves putting people in jail so they can't say much.
Yeah.
And I think you could really change the attitude. Reagan did. I remember I was at 1980. It was really weird. I was in my last year at Stanford, and some left-wing graduate student said to me, well, he can't do that. I said, he just got elected. Well, he can't question affirmative action. He can't say that about the Soviets. He can't say there's not going to be any hostages when he's inaugurated. And I said, why? He said, well, he just can't. And they were so conditioned.
Yeah.
That you couldn't do certain things. And Reagan just threw the steel ball into the Apple TV 1984 commercial screen and destroyed the paradigm. And you can do that very easily.
Yeah. Well, you were talking about financing. If I could pivot just for a second, I'm not sure there's a whole lot to say about it, but the Ukraine aid bill passed the House with $60 billion for Ukraine. I was wondering if you had any reflections on that.
Well, that was a tough one because it was $60 billion. And then what happened is they thought they were going to leverage the Democrats. And they found out something, that the Democrats would rather keep the border open than get Ukraine aid. So when they said, okay, we'll do the aid, but you got to close the border and you've got to deport people and build the wall, whatever. It wasn't even that radical. They said no. And then they started peeling off congressional seats. So you had Gallagher says he's going to quit. Buck said he's going to quit. McCarthy, people get sick. They don't show up. Well, they don't have a lead anymore. So then Johnson was in this situation where he couldn't say we're going to stop all aid because it was becoming political untenable. Because if he stopped all aid, then the Russians would probably be in Ukraine and in Kiev. And then they would say to the Republicans, you lost Kiev, you're bloodthirsty, this. But if he restored aid, which he did, allowed it to be $60 billion, that's a lot, then he was going to be praised to the skies by whom?
Democrats.
Exactly. And then Marjorie Taylor Greene said, see, I told you, they love him now because he sold out. And her attitude is, let's get rid of him. And then who are you going to get in? You don't have the votes. There's 10 or 15 of them won't vote for your candidate. So are you going to go cut a deal with a Democrat? And so it was messy. And then it's so complex that the Ukrainians, there were people in the Ukrainian parliament who were blaming us. Well, there's people who died because of you, because you delayed. It's your fault. You should have given this a long time ago. Excuse me? Why don't you have a national draft? You have 28 million people, 30 million people. Why don't you make a nation in arms? Everybody says you're Finland. Okay, well, tiny little Finland fielded an army of about 800,000 in 1939. You're not even drafting everybody. Just why don't you have a nation in arms? So we'll give you $100 billion if you, the Israelis have 800,000 people in arms. That would be the equivalent of a 2.5 million person army. And yet they have a manpower shortage. And then why don't you get smart and have defensive entrenched positions and let this Russian juggernaut hit you and bounce off and attrite them rather than thinking you're a World War II panzer division? So I don't like when we give them the money. It's for their defense, and then they say it's your fault. And they have a history of this. In the 2016 election, the ambassador to the United States from Ukraine did what? He wrote an op-ed endorsing Hillary Clinton. And then we had people, Mr. Vindman, who was a U.S. citizen but came from Ukraine and was, now he has a corporation that's profiting off the war by, I think he tries to rehabilitate vehicles as a middleman. And he was essentially the whistleblower. It wasn't Eric Ciarmella. He's not by any legal means a whistleblower. He wasn't even a party to that call of Trump's. So you had this guy who was acting really on the behalf of the Ukrainian government, and he got rid of Trump over what? Because he said he might delay because there was corruption. So Ukraine, the best thing you can do to get defensive arms from the United States is butt out of U.S. internal affairs. And then you're going to say to us, well, that's a good idea, but Joe Biden is butting into our affairs. Yes, he is. His family's corrupt, and he fired your prosecutor, Victor Slokin, and he's trying to overthrow the elected government in Israel. But just because he is embarrassing, that's the only word I'll use, then doesn't mean that you get a right to interfere in our internal affairs. We can decide on our own how many billions we're going to give you, but don't take the billions of dollars and then think you're going to have this massive offensive and break through the supposedly corrupt, weak, deteriorating Russian lines and win the war. It's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. I'm sorry. You're never going to get back Crimea. You don't have the wherewithal to take back Crimea and the Donbass. You could start World War III trying, and you can break all of your neighbors, but you don't have it. And don't tell me that that's selling out Ukraine or I'm a Putin puppet, because that was not Mr. Zelensky's attitude before February 24th. He did not say, my administration will get back the Donbass and Crimea. He was willing to negotiate with Putin. And that was not Barack Obama. All you leftists out there that are listening, don't tell me that you are traitorous unless you want to get back the Donbass and Crimea. Because you know who gave it away to them? Barack Obama did when he had that hot mic and he said, I will be flexible. This is my last election. Vladimir's got to get me space. I will be flexible on missile defense if he gives me space. He dismantled missile defense. Vladimir kept quiet for Biden's reelection, which he wanted. And then guess what? He went into the Donbass and Crimea, and Obama never said one time the United States wants Ukraine to get either back. No, neither did Trump and neither did Biden until recently.
Yeah. Well, Victor, let's go ahead and go to some messages and then come back and talk a little bit about the Trump trial, which opening statements took place this week. Stay with us and we'll be back.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
I would like to remind everybody that you can find Victor at victorhanson.com, and the name of the website is The Blade of Perseus. It has lots of free stuff on it, of course, but you can join with a subscription of $5 a month or $50 a year and get a subscription to the VDH Ultra material. So please come join us there. So Victor, lots of commentators and lots of news on Trump's trial, which is probably good for his campaigning. Maybe this will work out better for his campaigning than actual campaigning. But opening statements for the Trump trials, what are your reflections on the opening statements?
Well, it was a joke from what we can tell. I didn't listen to the actual, but I looked at the news account. So basically, Mr. Bragg and his hired gun are saying, we're going to charge Donald Trump with illegally manipulating the 2016 election because he signed a non-disclosure form and he paid Michael Cohen, his attorney, to pay her, and he wrote it off as a legal expense. And the fact that he didn't write it off as a campaign offense expense meant that it affected the election and therefore it was a felony. And we're going to prosecute him. Now, as far as the statute of limitations goes, the COVID gave us a couple of years, so it's not past the statute of limitations. As far as the federal prosecutors go, we had to step up. I mean, I'm telling you what the subtext was.
Yeah.
The federal prosecutor saw nothing wrong, but I'm a state prosecutor, and I'm going to step up and do that. So they don't have a case, so what are they trying to do? They're trying to say that the head of the National Enquirer, Mr. Pecker,
yes,
and they love that name because they put Trump and Pecker and they use that headline. But he basically says Trump and I were buddies and we tried to suppress news that was negative. Yeah, I guess he didn't do one thing. He didn't hire the FBI didn't go hire people from Twitter to interfere in election and to censor the New York Post laptop story. So we're supposed to get outrage. Oh, my God, the National Enquirer and Trump tried to work together during the campaign so there was not sensational news about Trump's private life. Okay, but Joe Biden's FBI said don't give us any information, any publicity, any notice of this laptop. And then we're going to try to warp the election by getting 50 former intelligence, so-called authorities, to swear a lie that it was Russian disinformation. So what I'm getting at is they're trying to pour everything in there. They're going to get him in there. And he said to Trump was popular with the ladies. They've got a Playboy woman that he allegedly had a relationship. They're going to have pictures of Melania not in the class, the room. And she said today that mom, being a mom is really important. So they have that all highlighted. And so what they want to do is, this is an excuse to do three or four things. Keep him off the campaign trail. Tie him up so he doesn't know what's going on in his future. He can't plan. Bankrupt him. Get every single thing about his private life into the courtroom, no matter how extraneous. And four, five, gag him so he can't talk about anything. And that's their plan.
It's working. It's working.
It's working, but we don't know the effect that it's having on the electorate. The common opinion, the communist opinion, is conventional wisdom is that it's working in the short term, but as this long spring and summer wear on, and people see Donald Trump day after day after day barking at the moon, then they're going to get tired of it. And they're going to turn away. I don't think that's true, because turning away means Joe Biden.
Yeah.
And he's a very unsympathetic person. He's obnoxious. He's a pathological liar. So when every day he's talking about cannibals eating his war hero uncle who piloted a plane when he was a passenger in a plane that had mechanical problems that ditched in the ocean. And he's, you know, he says, nobody's ever been to college but me, and Donald Trump did that. And you have all these things happening with the anti-Semitism he won't get into because he's scared of 250,000 voters in Michigan. I don't think that that is going to happen, but that's the strategy, that people are going to get tired of it.
Are going to get tired of
Donald Trump. That's the left's attitude. It's to weaken him, to cut him with 1,000 wounds. And then finding people say, I can't take it anymore. Gets, you know,
yeah.
Maybe sometime in August or September, he's in jail and he's trying to say he can campaign from jail. And then they have to get another candidate, and it's a mess.
I think he might thwart their efforts. However, I was just at a Fresno GOP dinner and I saw Devin Nunes there. And you know what he said? He said, there's one, you were on the stage too, so I was watching you. But the one thing I picked up on was he said, there's one thing they can't do or they can't beat Trump at, and that is they cannot outwork him. He is working all the time. And that was kind of nice to hear that.
He has enormous, he's a force of nature. It's inexplicable because he's overweight. He doesn't, you know, he eats as he pleases. He's 70, he's going to be 77. So you want to know, and he gets about 4 or 5 hours sleep, and he has about an 18-hour day. So it doesn't make sense, except he is a force of nature, and he can out-campaign Biden, but he has to be careful how he directs that force of nature. First debate of 2020, he used that force of nature to interrupt, and you had a tottering Biden who had taken 3 or 4 days off to sleep, probably on Adderall, and then he interrupted him, and he made him sympathetic, where if he had demanded another half hour, because they canceled one of the debates, in 2 hours of being polite but cross-examining Biden, he would have been as successful as he was in the second debate, of which time 60 million people had already voted, unfortunately. So he has to channel that energy in a positive way. I thought today, and I'm speaking on Tuesday, he did very well because he talked about Biden's weaselly both sides. And I thought that was very effective. There's something, whatever that somebody thinks about him, he's very authentic. They say, oh, he's duplicitous. He may be all of that, but he's not different. He just is, you see what you get. And we know what the Biden family was like. These are people who lecture us about the rich have to pay their fair share, why they're cheating us, their fellow Americans by not paying their taxes or claiming their debt repayment and all that, and Hunter's problem. So he's genuine, and we'll see what happens. But he's got a long way to go.
All right, let's take another break.
I'll just make one point before you break. It's been fascinating to see Jonathan Turley, who didn't vote for him, and Andrew McCarthy, who was opposed to him, who are examining this case and very effective in their analysis of showing the nation and explaining just how corrupt these people are that are trying to prosecute him.
Yeah.
Because they're not Trump advocates at all.
No, and they definitely are convincing when they say that the charges are trumped up and that they are they can't believe that any court would accept them, except the fact that these prosecutors have judges that are on the left side. So, of course, they've taken the case. So it's very sad. Victor, so let's go ahead and take a break and come back, and then we'll talk a little bit about students and teachers, and we've seen lots of videos out of these students hitting teachers, so it's been pretty shocking. Stay with us, and we'll be back.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back. So, Victor, I can't even, to be honest, I can't even watch some of them because they're hitting these teachers so hard. But, and I know that it's an exceptional experience, but it surely is so extreme. It's showing what the trend is in these schools and the total disrespect of the student. And that's kind of my take, but I was wondering, when you watch these videos of these teachers being slapped by students, it's...
Well, my son is a teacher and middle school teacher. My son-in-law is the vice principal. And I've been hearing this for a long time. And so why... And that picture in North Carolina, that guy just stood over the teacher, was sitting down and kept slapping her, and she couldn't do anything. And then nobody stood up or tried to help her. It's like that Chicago, on a different topic, it was like that kid in Chicago sitting down there where that young girl fights off a mugger who was trying to steal, and he just watches it.
Yeah, I remember that.
And so why is this happening? And the answer is that post-George Floyd, the false narrative said the following, that people of color are disproportionately being expelled from school because they're of systemic racism. And people said, no, it's because they commit violent acts to a greater degree than other students. And we know now the answer that was correct. And so we got rid of the idea that you expel students for violence. And most of these kids come from the inner city, and they have no parents or one single parent, or they're raised by their grandparents, and their parents are scared of them. And so they go to school, and they feel that they're of a protected minority, and they're going to have no concept, there's no deterrence, and they're going to get back at the teacher and slap her around, hit her. That worst was that, remember that big heavy kid that kicked that teacher on the ground and hit her?
Oh, yes.
That was the worst thing I've ever seen.
Yes.
And I don't know how you stop it. I hope the teachers sue the family and sue everybody around them civilly. But we're in la-la land, and there's a subtext that we will not talk about. And it's the same thing with smash and grab and violent crime. And the answer is that we have the African-American male, not the African-American female to the same degree or older people, the African-American male profile, age 15 to 40, that represents about 4 or 5% of the population, statistically is committing about 50% of the violent acts. Okay, I'm not interested in debating or even articulating why that is, whether it's social problems, systemic racism, you name it. It's just a fact. And after George Floyd, people made the argument that too many were being expelled in that demographic from school and too many were incarcerated. So we tried a great experiment. We said that we were going to have no bail in the major cities. So when you committed a violent act and you were a protected demographic, then you would not face any consequences and you would be out on the street almost immediately. And then we had another great experiment in which we said, if you slap a teacher or do anything, you're not going to be expelled. Okay. And now with the verdict is in, it was an ungodly disaster. And a lot of people say that they're so afraid of being considered illiberal, they'll say something along the following lines. And it hurts the inner city the most. Yes, it does. It does. Because African-American elderly or vulnerable or single women, when you have violent criminals and they live in that neighborhood, obviously they're going to prey on those people that are most proximate. But that doesn't mean that's all they prey on. All they prey on. And when you factor into this complex equation and you say things like Joy Reid every night on MSNBC or Sonny Hostin on The View, or you comment about white people, white people, white people, white people, white people, white people, and white privilege, and you don't distinguish between individuals, that refined intellectual, rarefied elite kind of little typology filters down, and people get the message, I can go ahead and hit this teacher. I can go ahead and hit this girl in the face. Because you know what? The DEI people have told me that I'm a victim and nothing's going to happen to me. And I found out that to be true. So now, where are we? You stop and frisk. You can't do this. Broken windows theories are all the things that work to keep a calm inner city are gone and a calm school are gone. So now we have to go back to square one. And the question, the $64,000 question, are we up to it? Because to restore deterrence and safety, we're going to have to arrest, indict, convict, and jail. Put people in jail for 3, 5, 8 years. The jails are going to have to fill up again until people get the message. It's very dangerous to push somebody in the subway. Or if you walk along the streets of New York and you walk up to a woman and hit her in the face, you're going to go to prison for 5 years. And that will stop it. And then you're going to have to expel a lot of kids that hit teachers or use violence. And yeah, you're going to have to say, I don't care what color people are. I don't care if it's 99% white students, poor white. I don't care. I just care about having a safe environment for everybody. And we have to get rid of this idea that, you know, that we always favor the oppressor. And we don't care about how about the other people in the room? When you slap a teacher, nobody can study. You just ruin the whole day. How about all these students at Columbia? They pay, what, $75,000 to go to Columbia? And all of a sudden the president says, whoop, I can't control my campus. And whoop, I told them to get off campus and they won't. And oh my God, they're blocking Jewish students. They're calling, I'll just go to Zoom. So now everybody goes to Zoom at NYU or Columbia. And so somebody can say, well, wait a minute, there's no COVID lockdown. I paid good money. I don't pay for Zoom. I can get a Zoom class on the internet. So you punish everybody else because you don't have the vertebrae to go in there and say to people, you are disrupting and breaking university policy. And it's all about deterrence on every level.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some stories and see what your reflections are. Recently, the Coast Guard has intercepted a boat with gangbangers on it from Puerto Rico who were trying to illegally immigrate into our country. And so I was wondering, of all the criminality coming into this country, it's really doing a lot of destruction, and probably on your subject that you're talking about.
Well, I think we've lost the narrative that people attacked Trump when he ran, when he said, you know, they're not sending their best people. There's some nice people, but everybody realizes that the crime is inordinate, and the left that keeps saying, oh, there's no crime. It's because it's not being reported in most cases. And a lot of people are coming here to prey on people. And we have all these people, you know, when their time in free housing is up in Chicago or New York, what do? They say, this is unfair. And what I'm getting at is, we've got this whole progressive left-wing ideology that's the dominant religion of these agnostics and atheists and secularists that are running the country right now. And in it, the idea is that you don't dare enforce rules, keep standards, protect your way of life, defend intellectually, spiritually, your civilization. You just don't do it. And so what that sends the message to foreign students from the Middle East, that you come to these people and they're like sheep and you can shear them all you want. Or Chinese students that you come here, or Chinese actors who can just lock, stock and barrel, take huge amounts of American expertise and technology back to China, send it. Or it sends a message to Puerto Rican gangs, you can come here and get rich. Or you can come from Venezuela. You can steal, and nobody's going to do anything to you. Because they have contempt. They have contempt for the civilization. And ultimately, it's the schools. So if you ban people from wearing an American flag on their jacket, or they can't have an American flag on their car, or you teach that America's culpable, 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 then you inculcate these generations that they don't believe in anything, and then they just, to get along with the criminal element or the foreign element, they just fold. And the foreign element is a circular. They say, look, I can say whatever I want. When you look at those crowds of people from Gaza saying death to America, and that one woman in that clip says, I'd like to blank, blank the organ of bin Laden, you know, she said that.
Yeah.
Fillet bin Laden. And then you get the impression, she says, I'm going to be as outrageous as I want. And you're not going to say a word about it.
Oh, on that subject, did you see AOC said that these were peaceful protests? She was doing a speech, and Joe Biden, I think, was there and followed her. And she said, oh, yes, and these mostly peaceful protests at Columbia.
Mostly
I couldn't believe
peaceful.
It.
She doesn't know anything. The squad, I mean, they're all anti-Semites. She's a joke. She doesn't, if you ask, she's an international relations straight-A student, right, from Boston University. If you said to AOC, here's a map, would you point out, just write in the names of the countries, Israel, West Bank, Gaza, if there are countries, but areas, and Jordan, Syria, she couldn't do it. There's no way in the world she could do it.
That's a sad
commentary. She's a product from the university, and I've been associated with a half century, and I've just watched that they don't require anything. They don't require anything. You know, 30 years ago, I was worried about this, so I got that cultural literacy had in one of the editions by E.D. Hirsch. He had a list of terms that the educated person would know, and they were things like latitude, longitude, Ionic, Doric order, George Washington, just common things, Pythagorean theory. So I was teaching my humanities class, and every day we did 20 of them. I discussed them, and then I said, these are going to be on the exam, interspliced with the essay questions on the literature. And at the end of the semester, after 15, 16 weeks, these kids were getting some little taste of what an educated person would know about them.
Yeah.
And these people don't have any of that. It's a sin of omission as much as commission, because they're spending so much time on trying to figure out unique ways to say somebody's racist.
Yeah.
It's a racist country.
Or that they're a victim, same thing.
They're a victim. They just love to be victims. Victim. All these upper middle class kids are always looking for some angle in lieu of hard work and excellence and achievement. And at some point, I think people have just had it with it. Well, they've had it with it. They're self-selecting. But all of you who self-select and you move to the rural red state, they're going to come for you, believe me. That's not the answer. The answer is to confront these people and say to them, Harvard is not yours. We're taking it back. And the New York Times, we're going to demand that it, and the NPR, we're going to defund it. And we're going to tax the university to fight back.
Yeah.
You have to do that in California. This was Reagan, Dick Mason, Pete Wilson, 24 years of good governance. My God, they did so many wonderful things with the freeways, the universities, the California Water Project, national state parks. It was just amazing what they did. Now they're undoing it all.
Balanced budgets.
Balanced budgets. And we don't have to let that happen.
No. Well, maybe there's some encouraging things in the news lately. Google fired up to 50 workers due to anti-Israeli protests inside of Google itself. So maybe something's starting there. And today, Alec Baldwin had a scuffle with an anti-Israeli protester outside a coffee
lesser
shop.
Of two evils. I think somebody at Powerline, maybe it was Scott Johnson, who's really a smart guy. I think he said something to the effect that, on the one hand, Alec Baldwin. On the other hand, these anti-Semitic people, they got hit their camera. I'll take Alec Baldwin. And that's the same thing with, what was the guy in True Romance, Rappaport, that actor?
Yeah, he played Elliot. Not Elliot.
Not Elliot. He played the would-be actor.
Yeah.
And he's hated redhead. Trump. He was just over the top with his venomous and scurrilous and obscene attacks on Trump. And now he got what he wanted, and he sees how anti-Semitic these people are.
Yeah.
He just says he wouldn't necessarily vote for Trump, but he's not voting for these people.
Yeah.
It's very a dilemma. I don't know what's going to happen, because the whole dialogue so far is we cater, pander, appease the Arab American vote. But in actuality, in terms of financial resources that are given to candidates and the actual numbers, the Jewish American votes, I don't know. It's probably 3 to 4 times larger.
Yeah.
And it's more consistently, those ballots are cast, and 70% of them go to the Democrats.
Yeah.
And except for a few oddballs like Fetterman, there is not anybody in the Democratic Party hierarchy that's objecting to any of this. All they can say is they try to find innovative ways to ingratiate themselves with radical Islamists. They were going to get rid of not Netanyahu. It's all Netanyahu's fault. Netanyahu did it. And then you look at the polls, and 75% support everything Netanyahu does.
Of the Israelis,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, they do. And in fact, if they're to the right of Netanyahu.
Yeah.
That was a weird thing nobody comments on. When Hamas went in to southern Israel and hit those kibbutzes, they were all left-wing. So they basically decapitated the left-wing party, the sympathetic party to Hamas. So when you lose the left-wing, there's no support at all for you as far as Gaza goes. So Netanyahu, if he wasn't there, you'd have to invent somebody like him. And yet, that's all they can do is blame him. They can't come to the idea, the Democratic Party, that the diversity, equity, inclusion movement is systematically racist. All it talks about is racial fides. All it is a effort to make sure that elites in academia, in the media, in government, in law, get something on the basis of racial spoils. And the only way that they can get something is to use venomous attacks on race to make people give them something out of, I don't know, guilt or shame. And it's getting to the point where the less they get, the more venomous and toxic they sound.
Yeah.
And it's filtering down, as I said earlier, to people on the street and manifested in violence. And nobody has the courage to say, DEI, oh, I take that back. Did you see, just came across my mind, what David Mamet said the other day?
No, tell me.
He said the DEI movement is a fascistic, violent movement.
Yes.
And I know him, and I listen. And, I've had lunch with him a couple of times, and I really like him.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a giant of screenwriters and novelists, and he's been absolutely forthright. And Fetterman has too. When he had that stroke, it must have cleared out plaque or something, because he's amazing.
He's on point now. He's like,
he's fearless.
You can't do
I guess
this.
Maybe it might be anybody. You know, there's been a couple of times in my life when I was embedded in Iraq on one occasion when a rocket came right at us. Another time when I had my ruptured appendix in Libya. Another time when I had this bike collapse and I destroyed my face and sinuses and everything, that you don't care anymore. You know what I mean? You just think, it's not going to work, so I'm going to say or do what I want. And I think that's Fetterman. He's had this stroke. He's had, you know, he knows it could happen anytime.
Yep.
And he's just liberated.
Yeah, it seems so. Well, I have one last question, and then we're at the end of our show. And it's kind of separate from all the rest, but Kim Jong-un, and this was in February, he declared unification with South Korea was no longer possible. And I didn't know he was ever entertaining it, number one.
He says that
why
was
would
his
he
narrative
write,
all the time.
What, that oh, that he was going to have a unified Korea?
Yes, he was going to either nuke Korea, he just said the other day, or he was going to invade and take it back. And it's hard to know. I hadn't looked at that story, but you're saying that he's no longer threatening to invade and unite the Koreas under communist leadership?
I wasn't sure what he was trying to suggest. I mean, it seemed sort of out there that...
Or does he... I mean, he's abandoned his unification goals and he's saying that we're not going to try to forcibly make one Korea? Or is he saying that South Korea cannot... Because there's people in South Korea that say, when it collapses, we'll unify it.
Yeah.
And
can we not get along with it? You're right. I wasn't sure what his general point was. It wasn't clear in the article. So he may have been going both ways, but he seems to be frustrated with it. So Korea, the status of Korea has been stasis for so many years, and stasis with anger, hostility on both sides, and I guess that's going to continue. I don't know.
I think what it really is three things.
What?
That the South Koreans are starting to wake up, and they are rearming, and Japan is rearming, and Australia is rearming, and Taiwan is rearming, and the Philippines are rearming, and he knows that if he should do something, that South Korea would be inundated with sophisticated weapons. And he's looked at what Iran, he's looking right, number two, he looked at the Iran-Israel exchange. And he said to himself, non-Western weapons, not 99% of the 320 various projectiles did not make it in. And then, by the way, there was an amazing story in the Wall Street Journal. I mentioned it very briefly, but it said of the over 100 ballistic missiles, 50% either failed to launch or failed in flight. And I mentioned that earlier, but if Kim is looking at that and he says, wait a minute, that's our rockets. And that was the biggest launch of our ballistic missiles or our spin-off missiles in history. And 50% of them didn't make it. If they had nuclear weapons on the nose, they would have either blown up on the launch pad or just crashed into Jordan or crashed into one of their allies or something. Yeah. So our weapons are not good, and South Korea's probably got the same anti-ballistic missile system and capabilities, or Israel does, or will.
Yeah.
And then third, he's looking at my buttons bigger than yours. And that's Donald Trump in November. Remember Trump's famous thing? He had a great, of all the weird things that Trump said, that was the best he ever said. When Kim Jong-un had been serially threatening Obama and said, he mentioned he could take out the West Coast, Portland, and all that.
Yeah.
I'm paraphrasing, but Trump said something to the effect, will somebody tell this lunatic that I have a bigger button than he does and it works? And everybody got... they got freaked out by it. Oh, Trump wants nuclear war, but they didn't. They need to go read The Art of the Deal and The Art of the Deal and The Art of the Deal, all 12 variations, because as soon as he did that and Kim backed down, then he wrote kind of a love letter to him, you know.
Yeah, you're the greatest guy.
Exactly. It's like he says in his books. I read it when I had to do research for the Trump book. He says, you take somebody in a deal, and then you don't rub his snout in it, and you praise him. So you might have to do business with him again, or you don't want people, you know, ridiculing him, and so he comes back to haunt you. And that's what he did.
Yeah.
He does that with everybody. He was tougher on Putin than anybody. He got out of the asymmetrical missile deal. He got rid of RESET. He sent javelins that Obama dared not send the Ukrainians. He sanctioned the oligarchs. He did everything. And then he met with Putin, and he talked to him. And you were supposed to think that because Joe Biden called him a killer or whatever he said, he was tough on him? No, he froze Ukrainian aid when he came in because he was afraid Putin would get mad. He told Putin, if you want to invade, it's got to depend on whether it's major or minor. Hey, you're doing a lot of cyber attacks, Vladimir. Keep the hospitals off the list, please, please. And the same thing with Obama. Give me space. So these left-wing presidents appease, and then they have this stupid little braggadocio, you know.
Yeah.
It's all back to this infantile, I'm going to take Trump behind the gym and beat him up. They're just, and Trump goes along and really does something tough on Putin. And that's why Putin does not want him president again. They all say, oh, he wants Trump. No, he doesn't. He likes Biden.
Yeah.
Biden is like a big fat sheep that he has big clippers and he can just shear him whenever he wants. That's okay. Us, unfortunately. I take no delight in that, what he's doing to us. But that was very funny about Trump and Kim Jong-un.
Yeah.
Well, somebody told
didn't
us.
Didn't he call him the little man?
Fat man. No, little rocket man.
Little rocket man, that's right.
Will somebody tell him? As if, and all the Europeans, everybody was going crazy that he's threatening. And what he was basically saying when he said, my button is bigger than yours, is we have 5,500 nuclear devices, and they all work. And you have maybe 16 or 17, and they may blow up on the launch pad.
You don't know what they're going to do.
You don't know what they're going to do. I wish somebody would follow that story up because... it really redefines the whole Iranian-Israeli thing. So if Iran, everybody says Israel got the short end of the tit for tat. And I just finished an article that I'm going to send to tomorrow for the syndicator, and I think it's the opposite. Israel showed the world they can knock down anything Iran sends. Iran showed the world they can't get in one thing. Iran showed the world that the missiles may blow up somewhere or dysfunction with nuclear weapons on them. The Arabs are thinking, do I really want to be on the trajectory of an incoming nuclear missile from Iran pointed at Israel when it might blow up over Amman,
yeah,
you know, or Damascus or somewhere, or Gaza?
Yeah.
And then finally, Israel, they said, well, it was just anemic. They only sent three missiles, but they all got through. And they didn't have to violate the space of Jordan or anybody. They got through and they took out the very platform that's designed to protect their nuclear facility. So it's like, well, you took 320 and for 99% fail rate, we only did three, but it was 100%, and we didn't do anything but aim them at your most sophisticated anti-missile system that's designed to take out all of them. We send them right down your throat, and it's right next to your nuclear facility. So you get the message? Yeah. There's nothing you can do to stop us. Yeah. And that we can stop anything you send. And maybe you're the greatest enemy to yourself because you're going to blow yourself up trying to deal with sophisticated rockets and bombs that you don't understand.
Yeah.
So I thought they got the advantage in it.
Yeah,
I think
it sure seems like it.
Iran did too.
There, that just is awesome to really contemplate what actually went on in the last 2 weeks in that sense.
Well, I think it is, and everybody has the wrong take when they said that. Some people I really admire as astute analysts have been writing articles, I won't mention their name, how Israel's in dire straits and that they should have done this or done that or done that, and Iran is in the driver's seat. Does Iran really think right now? If that's true, just ask yourself this hypothetical. You're an Iranian mullah. After what we saw the last 3 weeks, I got a great idea. I want to send in 300 more missiles into Israel. And somebody's going to say, yes, or somebody say, please don't do that. Because next time, they're not going to send three. They're going to send 300 here. And we'll have no electricity, no nuclear facilities, no ports, no air force, nothing. No anything. So don't do that. I think that's more likely.
Yeah, that sure is. Well, Victor, I have a reader at the end of this, our Friday news roundup, and it's titled Behind Enemy Lines. And he gives you 5 stars. And he says, I'm a federal civil servant who loves the honesty about our national situation. My wife and I listen to the show on our weekend drives. I hold the wheel enthralled by Victor's incisive assessment of our nation. My wife falls asleep to the soothing vibrations of Victor's calm voice from the stereo. Thank you for the marital bliss. I heart Sammy.
All I can say is I really appreciate, but that letter is balanced about where I work, because I work on the Stanford campus. So everything I say, which I'm very careful about, not to be inflammatory or accusatory in the negative, you know, not to be beyond the pale, so to speak. But I know I get a lot of flack from the other side, a lot. And I'm not trying to test the boundaries at all.
No.
I'm just trying to tell the truth, and it's not us who are listening and people in the conservative movement that are crazy. We're still right down the middle of a traditional America. It's these people crazy. And so they think that because we're normal, we're crazy, because they're going way off the spectrum. And so they're trying to bring what normality is way to the left. And we're saying, no, we're going to stay right where we are, center-right country.
Yeah.
And if you think this being center-right in traditional America is now revolutionary, reactionary, whatever you want, that's your problem, not our problem.
No. Well, Victor, thank you for everything this Friday. Oh, and I wanted your listeners to know that you did an interview with Miranda Devine, and we published it on Wednesday instead of Saturday, because we wanted to get it out so it the important stuff
she
on it.
She is so astute. You know, when you talk to her, she just says things haphazardly or casually that are very insightful. You know, when she says things about, she was talking about the Bidens, and then she just got into the parentage, and she said that you can kind of judge a person by their children, how they raise them. And so I hadn't really heard somebody say about Hunter. You could say a lot of things, but the fact that he wasn't well-parented. But she said it so matter-of-factly that it was a matter of common knowledge.
Yeah.
And she did that through that whole interview. I think everybody would like it. She's a very valuable analytical. You know, I'm really somewhat enthused about the conservative movement, because for the most part, all the people who defected, the Never Trumpers, were males, right?
Yes.
Most of them. And the people who came out of, you know, she was in Australia, right? But really came to the fore. Julie Kelly, who's wonderful, and Miranda Devine, and Megyn Kelly. Boy, Megyn, when you listen to her podcast, she is absolutely fearless. She really is. And she's not just bombastic. She's analytical. And
I heard her talking to Glenn Beck the other day, and she was saying that since she's left Fox, she has all that freedom. She goes, I am so happy that I don't know whether she got fired or let go or whatever, but she's like, it was a good deal because now I say whatever I
maybe
want.
Maybe she's like the Escalian trilogy. There's play one, Megan Bound, and then play two, Megan Unbound. And so that... Whatever it is, we're really lucky that we're getting all of these courageous, sophisticated, analytical women that are coming in, and they have more guts than we do. I mean, Julie Kelly took on the whole January 6th myth,
yeah,
and analyzed, and she's now using those talents to deconstruct these trials, and it's been really wonderful to watch.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of really talented women.
Well, thank you, Victor. And we hope to... So that was my way of explaining that there is no Saturday episode this week because it was published on Wednesday. So please go see the interview with Miranda Devine. And thank you very much, Victor. And thanks to our audience.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. Much appreciated.
This is Sammy Wink and Victor Davis Hanson, and we're signing off.